Manoram, Manoram, Manam, Manoram, Nanam, Manoram, Vitam, Manoram, Nanam, Manoram, Manam, Manoram, Muradipate, Kilam, Manoram. Vachanam, Manoram, Janitam, Manoram,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna
Krishna Krishna Hari Rama Hari Rama 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 Hari 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 Krishna 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 Hari 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 Rama Hari Rama 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 Hari Hari Jai Prabhupada Prabhupada Jai Prabhupada 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 Jai Om Vishnu Pad, Palana Hung Sad, Paravinakacharya, of Sutela, Satishi, Shimad. His Divine Grace of Ayachalanada, Bhaktivananda, Dosami, Srila Prabhupada Kijai. ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Anantakoti Vaishnav, Vrinda Kijai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai. Param Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Ganat Ha Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijai. Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Saim Kund Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturnam Kijai Chagadasami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shimadi Lasi Devi Kijai Sampaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami, Namani Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani, Nivashesha, Shunyavani Paschacha, Tejatarni. So I'm going to read the translation. This is about Krishna. It's called Madhur Ashtakam. His lips are sweet, his face is sweet, his eyes are sweet, his smile is sweet, his heart is sweet, his gait is sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor's sweetness. His words are sweet, his character is sweet, his dress is sweet, his belly folds are sweet. His movements are sweet, his wandering is sweet, everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. His flute is sweet, his foot dust is sweet, his hands are sweet, his feet are sweet, his dancing is sweet, his friendship is sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor's sweetness. His singing is sweet, his yellow cloth is sweet, his eating is sweet, his sleeping is sweet. His beauty is sweet, his tilak is sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. His deeds are sweet, his liberating is sweet, his stealing is sweet, his love sports are sweet, his oblations are sweet, his tranquility is sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. His Gunjaberry necklace is sweet. His flower garland is sweet. His Jamuna river is sweet. His ripples are sweet. His water is sweet. His lotuses are sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. His gopis are sweet. His pastimes are sweet. His union is sweet. His food is sweet. His delight is sweet. His courtesy is sweet. Everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. His gopas are sweet, his cows are sweet, his staff is sweet, his creation is sweet, his trampling is sweet, his fruitfulness is sweet, everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. Very nice poem written by Sri Vallabhacharya, who was initiated by Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So now we will go and continue reading from the Jaiva Dharma by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. So, Omagana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakya Chachur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Okay, let's share the screen. Let's see what we got. All right, here we are. So right now, we are talking, let me adjust this here. Okay, good. We're talking about something called epistemology, which is, how do you know what you know, what you believe in? That's called epistemology. And this is under the heading in Sanskrit of pramana. Pramana means evidence. What is evidence? What do we accept as evidence? And of course, the previous statement here was, as absolute incontrovertible evidence, we accept the Vedic statements given to us by the Acharyas. Two things. Vedic statements given to us by the Acharyas. Then, other things that are supportive of that evidence, such as pratyaksha, direct perception, can be utilized, okay? But a pratyaksha conflicts with your shabda, the Vedic evidence, through hearing process, then you question that pratyaksha or direct perception. How about that? Just like, all right, give me an example of what that means. So let's say you do a heart surgery and you don't see the super soul in the heart. You don't see the soul in the heart either. So what's happening? So your direct experience conflicts with what Shastra says, that God is in the heart. So what do you do? Which one do you accept? The Shastra. God is in the heart. But we know, through intelligence, why we have to throw out the direct perception, because our direct perception is based upon the fivefold, Panchamahabhuta, fivefold material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And so we can only see that. We can't see mind, we can't see intelligence, and we can't see ego. And we certainly can't see spirit, which is beyond all the eightfold elements, bina prakriti ashtada. Mind, intelligence, false ego, the additional three. So we can't see spirit. So therefore, that's why pratyaksha doesn't work in the case of spirituality. Pratyaksha may work in the case of something material. I just say, oh, the sun is still up outside. I just took a look outside. So that's pratyaksha. That works. Shastra's not going to tell me, is the sun up? Is it not up? Is it cloudy? Is it not cloudy? In those cases, pratyaksha is a better source of evidence. So according to the situation, pratyaksha may be better than shabda or the Vedic pramana, Vedic evidence. Okay, so previously it was a citation for the Mahabharata that inconceivable states are not subject to material logic. The nature of the inconceivable is the beyond material objects. That's a tautology. So that means it's defining something by what it is. What do I mean by that? It says inconceivable states. It's basically saying, if we read that again, are inconceivable. So there's not subject to material logic. The nature of the inconceivable is beyond material objects, because just by the nature of something that's inconceivable, it's inconceivable. Huh? It's circular. You're defining something by what it is, so it's obvious. It's like things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. It's axiomatic. The statement from the Mahabharata shows the limitation of material logic. Thus, Rupa Goswami has written, Swalpapi ruchireva shadbhaktir tatvavo dika vavabo dika yuktis tu kevala naiva yad asya apatishtata. Even if one has a little taste for the topic of bhakti, he can understand it. He who tries to understand bhakti by dry logic cannot understand it, because logic is insubstantial. That's from the Bhakti Arasamrita Sindhu 115. Another quote is, one cannot know the truth definitively by logic. That is accepted by an ancient statement. A meaning produced with more effort by a skillful logician can be refuted by an other more skillful logicians. That's from the Vakya Padya Vartrihori. In other words, if someone is expert in logic and reason, you can prove any damn thing. You can prove the world is flat. You can prove that you're an animal, a horse. You can prove anything by word jugglery. So logic, tarko pratishta, shruti, na vibhina. So you cannot understand anything by logic, ultimate truth by logic. Because someone is expert in logic, usually we call them sophists. In the modern day world, they're called lawyers, or as Prabhupada would say, liars. If today you establish the truth based on logic, tomorrow another person more skillful in logic will defeat that truth. What then is the hope for logic? So, logic doesn't establish anything incontrovertibly. It can be used in the service of the Vedic evidence, the Vedic Pramana. This topic, although it appears to be very technical, is extremely important. Why is it important? Because people can ask, why do you believe what you believe? Which is the first step in devotional service, first step of convincing people about Krishna consciousness. Why do you believe something that in one sense is so much different than what we perceive in this world? Why do you believe that God plays a flute? I could believe that he plays the guitar or the harmonium, but the flute? That's so hard to play. You think God can actually learn how to play such an instrument? Actually, I tried to learn how to play the flute. It's very difficult, especially how to blow it properly. And the fingering I could get, but blowing it, it's very hard. So how can God learn it? He's a little boy. We know he didn't have to learn it. He knows and is expert at everything by his nature. That's his own nature. Prajna said, I've understood the Vedas are self-perfected pramanas. That means perfect evidence. The logicians present useless arguments against the Vedas. Now explain the second point. Okay, now we're talking about the Dashamula, the 10 points. And so we're now again to the second point of the 10 basic philosophical points. So someone sent me a text message. The second point of the 10 basic philosophical points listed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur as the Dashamula. Okay. Let's go. So, Babaji answers Vrajana's question by saying, Uristvikam tatvam viri shiva suresha pranamito yadivedam brahma prakriti rahitam tatanu maha paratma tasyam sho jagad anugato vishva janaka savai radha kantunava Jalada Kanti Chidudaya. Hari, that's Krishna, is the supreme tattva. Tattva means the different categories in this particular case, or truths, or eternal categories. Hari is the supreme tattva respected by Brahma, Shiva, and Indra. demigods. Brahman, without Shakti and without qualities, is the effulgence of his limbs. That's the Brahman aspect of the Lord. Paramatma, which is the localized aspect of the Lord, which is in everyone's heart. You know, God is in the heart. Who enters the universe as the creator is his Angsha part. That Lord is Radha Balava. Ooh. A spiritual form endowed with the complexion of a fresh cloud. Wow. Radha Balava. Brajanath said, the Upanishads say that Brahman beyond Prakriti is the supreme Tattva. By what logic does Gaura Hari say that Brahman is the effulgence of Hari? In other words, Brahman is the undifferentiated aspect of the Absolute Truth. Or, to be more specific, it's the effulgence of the Absolute Truth. That's what Brahman is. So, some of the Upanishads say Brahman is the supreme Tattva. And I'm just going to explain something before we get into Babaji's explanation. By the word Brahman in the Upanishads, it indicates spirit in a, let's say, categorical way. So spirit has three aspects, or the supreme spirit has three aspects. The supreme Brahman has three aspects. The impersonal Brahman, which is sometimes also called just plain old Brahman, and then the Paramatma, which is the super soul in every atom in everyone's heart. And then you have Bhagavan Krishna, the person behind it all. So here Babaji begins to explain. Babaji said, Hari is Bhagavan. Bhagavan has six powerful aspects mentioned in the Vishnu Purana. So that's what Bhaga means. What? It's opulence. And Vaan means to be full or complete or unlimited. So very important verse. And this verse was given by Parashara Muni in the Vishnu Purana. Aishvarasya samagrasya viryasya yashasriya jnanavairagya yoshchaiva shanambhaga itingana. The six bhagas, that means opulences, are complete control. That means strength. Influence, prestige, I guess. Prestige, good qualities, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. Of course, influence would be fame, and good qualities, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. All right. And control, renunciation. The unique tattva endowed with these six inconceivable qualities is Bhagavan. That's Krishna. The effulgence doesn't have those six qualities, at least. Not all the six qualities. It does not control because the effulgence is not manifest as a person. May have a little influence, pretty good quality and spiritual. Beauty, nah, not really. Beauty is a personal aspect. Knowledge, no, not really. It's sought aspect of the Lord. And renunciation, Brahman, effulgence, renounced. It's hard to connect the two. How can the Brahman, effulgence, be renounced? Anyway, so it doesn't really make sense. Renunciation means that there's a person who's not interested in something. So the Brahman, effulgence, you can't say it's renounced. Or it's attached. It's not a person. It's a personal qualification. All these things are personal qualifications. Let's see. Oh yeah, good qualities must be wealth. Then. Huh. Whatever. The unique tattva endowed with these six conceivable qualities is Bhagavan. So the Tatva means the eternal person or the eternal entity. It's like the jivas are a Tatva, we're eternal entities, and the energies are another Tatva. The energies, a particular category. Let's use the word category, even though the word Tatva doesn't mean categories. These qualities are placed in the matter of angas. Now here's something. In relation with the source of the angas, angi. So now we're talking about Bhagawan, who's the original Tatva, unique Tatva, Krishna. Let's just be more specific. Krishna. So these qualities are qualities of Krishna, and you consider their angas or branches or limbs, that's what the word anga means, of Krishna's manifestation. And Krishna is the source of all these limbs, angas, qualities. So therefore he's known as angi. Angi means the person who is the source of the angas. Who or what is the angi? In other words, who or what is that person who's the source of these qualities? Whose angas are these? In other words, who is the source? Not only the source, but who owns these angas or part of his identity? The anga is the svarup. Now here's another word. Svarup means the form of Krishna, the manifestation of Krishna. Swa or rupa. Rupa means form. And swa means his own. Like if I say, what is your swarupa? Let's say, Prabhu. What is your swarupa? What is your own form? And you may say, out of ignorance, my form is a 30-year-old mayel. No, your form, that is your temporary form, your mayarupa. Not your swarupa. Your swarupa, you don't know what that, sorry, heck, your swarupa is until you're completely Krishna conscious. You know, in general, the nature of your swarupa, you know it's what? Jivera Krishna. Nitya Krishna. Nitya Krishna. Seva Krishna. Jivera swarupa, nitya seva das. So, the swarupa of the jiva is an eternal servant of Krishna. That you know, right? Hopefully you know that. That's your nature of your swarupa. That is your swarupa, but to get more, let's say, definitive and technical about it, then there's other aspects of your swarupa that you are not aware of right now. Like your swarupa may be that of a coward boy, a gopi, even though your material rupa, which is not your swarupa, your mayarupa, may be that of a man with big muscles. I know it's muscles. I said that deliberately. So, different. Our swarupa is different from our mayarupa. Don't confuse the two. So in which all the angas, so in Krishna's swarupa, his own form, all the angas here are described as the qualities of wealth, strength, renunciation, etc., are manifest within Krishna's body or the activities of Krishna. But, well, Krishna and his body are the same. It's not that Krishna has a body. Krishna is the body is Krishna. Everything is non-different. Advaya Gyan. The tree is the angi and the branches are the angas. All right, that's what anga means, branch. Tree is the source of the branches. In other words, the tree itself, of course, the tree contains the branches. So you, in Krishna, the tree is the source, but also the branches are part of the tree, part and parcel, I guess you might say. But the trunk is there, and the branches are the angas of the trunk, in one sense. That in which all the qualities are situated is the angi, the possessor of all these angas. Beauty is the angi Bhagavan with his beautiful sword. Yeah, beauty is the angi of Bhagavan. You know, Bhagavan's, to be more precise, Bhagavan's angi, just to state it more concisely and more easily understood, Bhagavan's angi, Bhagavan is the angi and beauty is the anga, sorry. Now, this is hard to understand. This statement is not quite right. Beauty is the angi of Bhagavan. Bhagavan Krishna has as his anga Krishna. Bhagavan is the angi and beauty is the anga with the spiritual form. So the translation is not quite right. All the other qualities are its angas. The three angas are Aishwarya, Virya, and Yasha. Okay. Aishwarya means opulence, like money. Virya sometimes means heroism or strength. In this particular context, it means strength. Virya means heroic, strong. It's interesting. It doesn't only mean strong. It can mean heroism, too. Like Krishna's descriptions are of his pastimes are Mamavirya Samvita. Talks about Krishna's heroic activities, and that's how it's translated in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Yasha means fame. So, okay. Jnana and Vairagya are angas like rays emanating from Yasha. All right, here, let me unpack this. Jnana means knowledge, especially spiritual knowledge. Vairagya means detachment. Are angas that come from, or branches that come from fame. Interesting. Since there are qualities of that quality and not independent qualities on their own. Very interesting. Formless jnana, that means formless jnana, that means jnana, formless jnana means knowledge of spirituality without the knowledge of, okay, that's it. Knowledge of spirituality without the knowledge of the person behind the spiritual, is none other than jnana and vairagya, that means attachment and knowledge. And it is the svarupa, the form of Brahman. Okay. In other words, Brahman without Krishna, I mean, Brahman aspect of Krishna is formless. And that knowledge about him, about it, or him, or that aspect, is called formless jnana, which contains vairagya also. Therefore, Brahman is the effulgence of the supreme, of the spiritual world, sorry. Brahman, which is formless, that means the effulgence of the Lord, which is formless, devoid of action, devoid of limbs, devoid of qualities, is not a complete tattva. It takes shelter of the Lord's form. In other words, it's a manifestation of Krishna in his original form, Bhagavan. Fire's quality of illumination is not independent. It is a quality which depends upon the svarupa of fire. A little technical here. So illumination comes from fire. It's not that fire comes from illumination. Got it? So fire is, in this particular case, is the angi and illumination is the anga. Why do we say that? Because fire has other angas other than illumination. Other angas might be heat. Okay? That's another anga of fire. Okay. Pretty technical stuff. Rajana said, after describing the impersonal nature of Brahman in many places, the Vedas end with Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om. By this statement, the Vedas indicate that Hari is the supreme tattva. That's right, you got it. Who is this Hari? Now here's a very wonderful statement of tattva, perhaps the most ecstatic statement of tattva. Babaji said, Hari is the couple Radha and Krishna endowed with spiritual pastimes. That's the definition of Hari. So Prajna said, I will inquire about this later. Now explain Paramatma, who creates this universe. How is he the Ansha of Bhagavan? Very interesting explanation. Babaji said, Bhagavan, that's Krishna, by spreading opulence, Aishwarya, which means opulence, and Virya, which means strength or heroism, creates the material universes. After creating it, Bhagavan enters into it as one Ansha, Vishwarupa. So the Ansha, the expansion of Krishna, is the Vishwarupa, which means the form, universal form. Vishwa means universe, Rupa means form. Universal form is like what Krishna displayed in the 11th chapter of the Gita, or simply the understanding that the material nature in one sense is Krishna. In one sense, this, I don't know if you can see, no, you can't see. In one sense, this is Krishna. Because it's expansion of Krishna. Krishna's material energy, okay. But I'm not saying I worship my own or something like that. Vishwarupa. Although Bhagavan is one Ansha, he is always complete. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 5.1.1 says, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudashate Purnasha Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vishishate. You may recognize that verse in the Upanishad. But here it's from the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad. The unmanifest Brahman is perfect. So, unmanifest means that which you cannot see. The manifest of Brahman is perfect. From the unmanifest, that is Bhagavan in the spiritual world, because you can't see him, Brahman appears. From the unmanifest Brahman appears the manifest Brahman as various avatars. So in other words, as Bhagavan in the spiritual world, Krishna playing his flute in the spiritual world, he expands himself as the various avatars, like Korma, Matsya, Varaha, Rama, Narsingha. When the manifested forms emerge from the unmanifested Brahman, the unmanifest Brahman remains. Of course, let me unpack that. There's another complicated statement. But that's the same thing as, like Prabhupada explained, in spirituality, you have one minus one still equal to one. In other words, that's the Upanishad again. That Om Purnam Idam Purnam. Just like the verse we just read here. Ada purnamidam, idat purnam udashate, purnasha purnamadaya purname vishishate. Well, that is the translation. That when Krishna, basically, Krishna is the supreme whole, and so many complete things emanate from him, and he doesn't become lesser because of all those complete things that emanate from him or manifest by him. So when the manifest of these, the forms that we can see in this world, emerge from Krishna in the spiritual world, the unmanifest Brahman, Krishna remains, the unmanifest Brahman remains. Krishna remains as he is. He's not lesser, he doesn't lose anything, he's not weakened or anything like that. He was unlimited complete manifestations that are complete unto themselves emanate from Krishna, and he remains the same. How that is? That's a chincha. And as we read previously, don't try to understand a chincha, because the nature of a chincha is that it's a chincha. Got it? It's a tautology. The complete form, Vishnu, protector of the universe, who enters the universe, is Paramatma. That's the called the Shiradakshay Vishnu. He has three forms, Karanadaka, Shiradaka, and Garbhodaka Shayiv forms. The Karana ocean of Raraj is situated between the spiritual and material worlds. So what that is the Karanadakshay Vishnu, also known as the Mahavishnu, lies, and he lies on the serpent bed, and he breathes out, and the material world comes from him, and also the Karana ocean, which is translated loosely as the causal ocean. Causal ocean means when you're at one side of the causal ocean, there's no cause and effect. Everything just is. And the other side, everything has a cause, like in the material world. Therefore, Krishna, who is situated on the other side of the causal ocean, is known as Sarva Karana, Karanam, which means of all causes, he's the original cause, and he has no causes. He's the cause of all causes. The Karana ocean of Viraja, that means the causal ocean, is situated between the spiritual and material worlds. Bhagavan's Angsa, situated there, lying in the Karana ocean, is called Mahavishnu. That's what we just said. So, it's the same what I just explained. The Karanadaksha Vishnu is sometimes called the Mahavishnu. Maha means great. From far off, he glances at Maya and creates the universe through Maya. Gita explains, Maya jakshena prakriti sute sacharam. Sacharacharam. Prakriti gives birth to all moving and non-moving entities under my direction. So, let me explain what that is. At the beginning of the creation, when Krishna manifests all the universes in their what's called pradhana state, their state where there's no, it's like putty, silly putty or clay or something like that. Krishna glances at this putty, like ball or whatever you may call it, that has no variety, is not moving, nothing's happening, it's just like the inert stage or the unmanifest stage of material energy. Krishna glances at that unmanifest stage of the material energy, the pradhan, technically it's called, and that glance is called Shambhu. And for those of you who are not familiar, Shambhu means Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva carries the living entities, that's us, Prabhu, to the material energy and injects us in the material energy, just like a father injects the mother to have a child. Got it? And so we are injected within the womb, using further this metaphor, of the material energy, and therefore the material energy gives birth to us. Okay? So the material energy doesn't have us to begin with. And so we are placed here by the glance of the Lord. Now, how can the Lord glance and impregnate the material energy? That's also described in the Brahma Sangita. Angani yasha shakalendriyadri timanti. That the Lord can do anything he wants with any one of his senses, or just by willing it to happen. Krishna is not limited like us. I'm limited. I can only do one thing with my ears, for example. I can hear with my ears. Thank God they haven't been destroyed by kirtan. They wear earplugs. I can't eat with my ears. Prabhupada would give the example. You can't take food and start stuffing in the ears. You can't. You're limited, but Krishna can eat with his ears. And if he wanted to, he could take some pakoras and take them to his ear, and he could digest it. That's a spiritual body. So Krishna's body, he can do anything with any part of his body he wants. Okay. And so Krishna can impregnate with his eyes. Boom. Fortunately, the living entities can't do that in this world, or else there'd be a lot of unwanted babies running around. That would be very dangerous. Every time a man looks at a woman, there'd be a pregnancy. My injection, I already did that. Prakriti gives birth to all moving and non-moving entities under my direction. The Vedas say, so here's what I just said. So Aishita, the Lord glanced. Aitareya, Upanishad 3.11. Sa Imam Lokan Ashrajat. He created these planets. That's also from the Aitareya Upanishad 1.1.2. So when the Shakti of the Lord's glancing, when the potency of the Lord's glancing enters Maya, that means the material universe, he is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So that's the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu also is the potency, getting really technical, of the Lord's glance. At the same time, the glance itself is known as Shambhu. The atomic rays of the spiritual glance of Mahavishnu are the bound jivas. Wow. The little rays from that spiritual glance. The Shakti is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is put into the material energy by that glance too. Wow. Mahavishnu expands as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu by that glance, and that glance is has Garbhadakshaya Vishnu in it. Even though the glance is technically not a Shambhu or Lord Shiva. According to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his commentary on the Brahma Sanhita, wow. The atomic rays and the spiritual glance of Mahavishnu are bound jivas. So we're going to have to end here. Because it is time and it gets really technical. Now, I know people may have trouble remembering all these things. The main thing to understand is it's Krishna. He has his qualities. He's called Bhagawan. His qualities are his angas, like wealth, strength, renunciation, beauty, intelligence, fame. These are his angas. And Krishna expands himself. He has other angas, too. He expands himself as the different incarnations in this world. In the spiritual world, Krishna is called unmanifest because he's not manifest to us. It's a little brief explanation of what we just read. Okay. We will continue from this point tomorrow. So let's unmute ourselves. Hold on a second. Stop sharing. Allow you to unmute yourselves. It is quite technical. Today's classes are very, very technical. I tried to explain it as best I could. So, whoever wants to ask a question can type in the text window, which I do not have open right now. Chat. We call it a chat window. Or they can raise their hand, and I will see their little hand being raised, not on their picture, not in their video, but there's a little place where you can raise your hand, right at the bottom, and there's a little thing that says it's more, and it says right here, hand gestures, reactions. Go into reactions, and then you can do it. Now, Krishna manifests. The question is, someone asks, Brahmanavajans, is Krishna and also Jivadhos one and different from Krishna? Again, you got Jinjabeda Veda Dharma philosophy. It's a manifestation of Krishna. It's part of Krishna. But from the Brahman effulgence comes the jiva souls. Yes, the Brahman effulgence, the reason it's so effulgent is got all these little tiny jiva souls floating around. And they're all, it's a manifestation of Krishna and Anga, just like the jiva souls are. Yes. Okay. Anu, you have a question.
Hare Krishna Maharaji, Dhanda Pranam.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ji ki jai. Please accept my humble obeisances, Maharaji.
Oh, glorious Prabhupada. So you have a question.
Ji Maharaji, so in yesterday's class, it was said Praman depends on our senses. I do want to understand how that statement, Praman is like, for example, Vedas is a Praman.
Yeah.
The knowledge that we acquire from Vedas would depend on our senses, but Vedas themselves would not depend on our senses.
No, the Vedas don't depend on our senses.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are different, all right, let's be a little more specific. There's many pramanas, just to put it a Sanskrit word in the plural, which we often do. And the sense perception is one of the pramanas. The Vedas are another pramana. History is another pramana. Induction is another pramana. Logic is another pramana. So these are all pramanas. However, the pramana that is perfect, that's the Vedas. Those are the Vedas.
Okay.
But the senses are still pramanas, but they're still evidence, but they may be faulty evidence. Whereas the Vedas are what we say incontrovertible, which means they're faultless evidence. So we only, as far as spiritual subject matters are concerned, we only accept the sense perception when it coincides or it gives the same result as the Vedic conclusion. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you, Maharaji. Yes, I remember you mentioned Shabda Brahman yesterday.
Yeah, Shabda Brahman. But in the material world, sometimes it's more useful to accept the senses than anything else. For example, if I'm driving my car and my eyes tell me it's a red light, the Vedas are not an authority on that.
Mm-hmm.
So dealing with material subject matters, sometimes, well, all the times, basically most of the time, dealing with material subject matters, there's sense perception, and you have to be careful not to be subject to something called cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
Cognitive dissonance means when you interpret some statement, religious statement made by someone, and it contradicts what you're perceiving. Like if someone makes a religious statement, for example, that the earth is flat. Okay, here's a good one. So, you know, you got a lot of people who believe the earth is flat. Yeah, somehow they believe the earth is flat. Because Prabhupada made a joke one time. Prabhupada was asked if the earth is flat, and Prabhupada said, the earth is flat everywhere I walk. You know, so that was a joke. And so, but Prabhupada went around the earth, he saw that the earth was round. So if you accept that one statement of Prabhupada as absolute, and you say, yes, the earth is flat, that contradicts perceivable evidence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we definitely know, I mean, it's not that I've gone up in a spaceship, but actually I've gone up in airplanes, and I've seen the curvature of the earth. Of course, some of the flat earth people who believe in flat, the earth being flat, say the earth is curved because they make the windows in the airplanes in such a way so that the earth appears to be curved just to fool you. I mean, that's, talk about conspiracy theories, you know, people certainly lost their brains in that one. So that's called cognitive dissonance, where you believe something that is obviously in the material world not true, or you believe something is something different than it actually is according to observable reality. But when dealing with spiritual subject matters, then we defer to the statements of the Vedas. And when our senses contradict some senses, some statements in the Vedas, then we accept the Vedas instead of our senses. Like the example I gave about when someone's having a heart surgery, which I watched a heart surgery one time, and I didn't see Krishna as they popped open someone's heart. I didn't see the individual soul. Why didn't I see them? Because the soul and Krishna are transcendental, and my vision is not transcendental. So, in other words, my senses told me there's no Krishna, but my faith in the Vedas told me there is Krishna. So I accepted as pramana, the Vedic pramana, which is called shabda pramana, which is transcendental sound vibration. But the senses were still a type of evidence. Even though they're what we say controvertible, yeah, that would be the technical word. Even though they're giving false information, that's a type of evidence, but we reject that evidence. Just like in court, if you go to a court case, sometimes the lawyers will present some bogus evidence. And, you know, and that's evidence, but it's bogus. It's faulty evidence. And the evidence of our senses is faulty. You know, generally, like the example given before in the Jiva Dharma, is that sometimes we see land as water, as in the case of a mirage. You understand? So even materially, our senses lie to us. But when dealing purely with material things, it's oftentimes better to defer to the senses, like the example I gave when you're driving a car and your senses tell you it's a red light. And even if your guru tells you it's a green light, you defer to your...
your own senses.
Yeah. You're your guru because your guru may be colorblind or something like that. And he tells you, it's a green light, go through it. And you say, no Guru Maharaj. You have a right to say, no Guru Maharaj. I'm not going through a red light. That's an important point. So, but it's still evidence. Even if it's faulty evidence, the senses are always pramanas. That's also a type of pramana. But they're not completely objective. They're subjective pramana. Whereas the Vedas are objective pramana. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Okay.
I do have one more question, but I'll hold if anybody else has
just ask a question.
So, Maharaji, the topic that we discussed today does seem a little bit difficult to understand in the sense Krishna himself has energies, so the glance is an energy.
Yeah.
That gets on energy, which is material nature. So those two energies mixes to produce another energy. So, and all these energies are Krishna himself. So Krishna merging with Krishna, leading to Krishna?
Well, all the energies are Krishna himself and not Krishna himself simultaneously. That's called the Chinchabeda Veda Tattva. Krishna is different from his energy in the same way it's the same. But first of all, when Krishna glances, it doesn't produce the jiva souls, it manifests the jiva souls. The jiva souls are within the glance of Krishna. But the jiva souls are eternal. They're never produced at any time. In other words, they're never, as Krishna says in the Gita, Najayate Mriyate Vakadachan, in the second chapter of the Gita, the soul was never produced. Mm-hmm. There's no birth of the soul, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. In other words, no death. So when we say Krishna glances at the material nature and implants the jiva souls within the material nature, it's not that Krishna creates the jiva souls. The jiva souls are already there within the body of the Mahavishnu. Okay? Is that right?
Thank you so much, Maharaji. Hare Krishna.
Okay, thank you for the questions. And
yes, thank you.
Those are good questions, and that took up the question time, but that's all right. Once the light turns green, do I have to go to hell? disadvantage of spiritual mat? Someone says this funny question by one of my cute little disciples. Once the light turns green, he's referring to when I say you have to disobey, you don't accept the spiritual master who tells you it's a green light when it's red. Once the light turns green, do I have to go to hell for disobeying my spiritual master? No, your spiritual master was testing you, you rascal. Okay, so on that happy note, let's end, and we'll see everybody tomorrow night, same time, same station. All glories to Prabhupada.